Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
Happy New Year's. It's the Album Nerds Podcast.
Damn it.
Dude, I got Andy and Don with me. Andy, how you doing? Looking back, reflecting on 2024.
Yeah, I mean, 2024, man. It was definitely a year that existed in our history, and it is almost over. Can say that much for sure.
Remember when Andy disappeared for a while?
Yes, he did.
Was that this year?
Yes. Off on safari discovering himself. Luckily, he realized through those trials and tribulations how much he loved us and he came back.
We'll never really know what happened out there in the wilderness. How are you doing, Don?
Looks like we made it. Look how far we've come.
Okay. That's touching.
Yes.
I thought you were going to do Barry Manilow. Looks like we made it.
Yeah, that's the better one.
You're right. Either way, we've definitely made it.
I offended all the Fanilows.
We really need to get to some Barry Manilow at some point.
We should do Fanilows versus Juggalos.
There you go. I'm sure. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and we're going to have a really good show for you this time around. We're going to be talking about our favorite albums of 2024, so we're each going to share that. Don's going to ask us yet another deep question, and then we're going to have some shout-outs to some of our other favorite albums that we're going to briefly talk about at the end of the show. And then, of course, we'll spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we're going to talk about next time. But this week, it's all about our favorites.
That's what I'm talking about!
In 2024, the top grossing films were Inside Out, Tool.
Ouch.
That's really painful.
Very painful, yeah. I think that was the top grossing adult film.
The top grossing films were Inside Out 2, Deadpool and Wolverine, and Despicable Me 4. The most streamed shows were Fool Me Once, Bridgerton Season 3, and Baby Reindeer. Did you guys see that? That was messed
up. Never heard of it.
Oh, what was that about?
About this guy, this comedian who was like being stalked by this crazy person. Mm. Really disturbing.
Sounds funny.
Year also saw LeBron James score his 40,000th career point.
Wow.
The Paris Olympics made history by introducing breakdancing.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
We all remember that.
Yeah.
What was her name? Freeze Frame or something? That lady from Australia?
It was something like that.
how quickly we forget.
What we don't forget are the great albums of 2024. So today, each of us will present our favorite albums from this amazing year.
It was a very good year.
I guess to set some context here, the top selling albums of 2024, according to Billboard and AI and everything else, Taylor Swift, The Tortured Poets Department, Future and Metro Boomin, We Don't Trust You, and Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter. Now, this exercise is, of course, our favorite albums of 2024. So our approach might be different than what Billboard was looking at. So how'd you guys do in terms of like culling your lists, making these decisions? Andy's description might take longer than
Don. Yeah. How much time do you guys have here? Let me break down intricacies. No, I think this year I was a little more proactive with the list than I have been in the past. I started like in September, I want to say, putting together my general ordering of what I've been listening to. Definitely helps to keep up on it as they come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, for this, it's always kind of just, you know, how are you comparing one thing versus another thing, really? They're totally different in terms of their value. So it's really, I mean, for me, I'm just going back to like, what do I enjoy the most personally? Like, what's fun for me to listen to, I think is my big motivation.
It was a good year for me because actually, I mean, there was like 10 to 15 like legacy artists that I love that, you know, came out with albums. So, you know, I think the toughest part was sort of deciphering between those and also trying to expose myself to. Sorry.
I'll finish that sentence quickly.
Exposing myself to new things.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Yikes. That's. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was the usual kind of struggle. I found more stuff. It was keeping it all straight in my head as to what I liked and why. I did not do as good a job as Andy of annotating or keeping track of like what I might have liked about an album when I first heard it. So I'd 8 months later be like, oh yeah. And I'd listen to it again. I'm like, wait, I don't remember this. So
yeah, a year's a long time.
Yes, it is. It doesn't feel like it sometimes, but when it comes to those sort of exercises of like cataloging when something was within the last 365 days, that can be tough. All right. So why don't we get to our chicha choices, our favorites.
You choose me?
All right. Well, my favorite album of 2024 is from hip-hop artist Denzel Curry and his album King of the Mischievous South. This came out back in October. It is his sixth studio album for the Miami Gardens hip-hop artist. It's a kind of a unique album in that there was an EP that came out in July of the year, technically a mixtape.
Well, yeah, we'll have to try and unpack that at some point.
Yes. And this album came out a few months later, which was including a few additional tracks, which is kind of an interesting release process. Features tons of guest spots from over a dozen different artists in and around the hip-hop space. Let's play the lead single. This is Hot One.
So this is not about the program where celebrities eat hot wings and get interviewed? I just caught some of those lyrics.
That's a Hot Ones.
Oh, gotcha.
Now, this is the lead single featuring Tia Corn and A$AP Ferg.
And As Soon As Possible Ferg?
Yes.
Oh, I gotcha. Wow.
Part of the A$AP crew for those heads that are aware of such a thing. Anyway, so Denzel, Southern rapper, kind of fitting in with that Southern rap style. Been around since the mid-2000s, came up on SoundCloud. Do you guys ever listen to any music on SoundCloud?
When I have to, like if it's not on the other streaming services, yes.
Yeah, this was really, really popular in like the early 2000s, 2010s, kind of before Spotify really took over. Actually, for the style of rap in the early 2010s, there was a lot of artists that kind of broke through. Denzel was one of them. He had a mixtape, which I had just discovered, King of the Mischievous South Volume 1, does exist. Came out back in 2011.
Mixtape in name only, though, right? These are not being put on cassettes and distributed. I know that bands do still do that sometimes, distribute cassettes with their music on it, but that's not, there's no actual tape involved in this, is there?
Well, I don't know for sure. Largely, no. It's digital. But I think it's kind of the spirit that you would have on like a cassette tape where it's a little bit right. more rough, maybe a little bit less produced. Maybe it does have that kind of like handmade feel to it. But I thought it might be interesting to take a quick listen to what was really like his debut single back in 2011 on volume one of this record. This is the track called Head Crack.
Yeah, that sounds quite blown out.
Yeah, like the production value is much, much, much worse on those early records, those early mixtapes. That's Ghost Perp on production there, who was also like a big figure in that early SoundCloud days of early 2010s. My clickbait headline for this album: Denzel takes a victory lap and reminds us that it's good to be king. This is definitely kind of one of those records that someone who's established themselves in the space is, kind of coming around and just like, look how great I am. I established this. I'm kind of the king of the hill here. That's what this feels like to me. Denzel's been doing it for a long time. He has a lot of imitators, I would say, in this space. And this is not his most innovative record by any means, but I think it's a super fun one. And it does kind of feel like he's become that establishment almost in the Southern hip hop genre. Let's play the cut from the record. This is Act a Damn Fool. Always stand solid, never folding like a chair. I'd rather act
a damn fool. Back a damn tool. Wow, it's really interesting that he penned a song all about Don.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This really spoke to me. So this was not on the original mixtape. This was one of the four or five cuts that they added. The song was written by Curry Duke Deuce and Stuart Goldsmith.
I like that name. Duke yeah. Deuce. That's how I would say it.
And then you have Stuart Goldsmith, who just got a lawyer for the group or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, it also features Duke Deuce and Slim Gorilla. You know, high energy, intense, you know, I mean, I guess he's, yeah, I mean, you know, he has some, you know, charisma, I think, as a rapper. My clickbait headline is East Coast album nerd experiences modern Southern hip hop and shrugs shoulders. and that's not, I'm not like even criticizing the record, but I'm struggling to identify, you know, the differences between kind of like Southern hip hop and, you know, the East Coast stuff that we've listened to.
I would say, Don, I mean, I'm not an expert by any means, but it's more the swagger and the sort of laid back vibe that the Southern hip hop brings to the table, that maybe the East Coast is a little bit more uptight.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would, there's, the beats are stretched out. That's what, there's a sound to it that I've always
kind of. It's a little bit slowed down.
Yeah, that at least, again, I'm no expert on it, but that's always been my impression of Southern rap when I've heard it. I don't know that I could identify it, but when I know what it is, that's something I've heard as a commonality.
Yeah, I noticed, I mean, he seems very, going back to that word, braggadocious on this record. And I, you know, I read that that's not really the case on his previous albums.
Well, but this is, you know, his coronation as the king of the, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of seems like, is he like sort of, this is putting his stamp on the genre or something?
Yes, that's what it feels like to me.
I would say so. His earlier work, I would classify it being much more aggressive, maybe violent, or a little more street orientated. On this record, he's kind of like removed himself from the street, and he's kind of looking down on things. Is how I would sort of describe this.
Yeah, I enjoyed the record. You know, just kind of a nice flow throughout it. Definitely kept me engaged. That's a little long, you know, in the 50 something minutes. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But
solid.
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, the mixtape was about 35 minutes, and I felt really good at that length. And they added these couple extra tracks. There's a couple that maybe didn't need to be there, in all honesty, but I think the overall vibe and the flow on this, I think, is what drew me to it. All right, let's play the cut from the record. This was on the original mixtape. It's called The Hoodlums. Just that loud pack, how your ass, man. Click, clack, knock your shit back.
No more chit-chat. That's the sound that I kind of, that beat has that Southern drawl to it almost, in my opinion. Yeah, so Hoodlums, it's the first time Denzel Curry and ASAP Rocky have teamed up.
It's probably the ASAP crew there, Don.
They like to get things done quickly.
Pretty punctual, guys. Yes, as soon as possible. Oh my God.
Is that not what it stands for? Is that not what ASAP is? Oh, by the way, it's always strive and prosper. So apologies all around.
There you go. There you go. See?
Thank nice you, time. Internet.
See? Learning things.
Yes. Play That Boy Zay brings his raw energy rounding out that trio. It's bass heavy and I guess what a, you know, kind of a Southern beat. It's the second to last track, but it does have that kind of climax feel to it. I think he throws around King of the Mischievous South within the lyrics there as well. It's gritty, slick. I'd say this one production-wise sounds a little cleaner than some of the others, and it's very much full of swagger. My clickbait headline to describe the album, King of the Mischievous South brings rapid-fire rhymes, beats with a Southern drawl, and all of his friends. We're talking, I counted maybe like 24 guests.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
I mean, holy
the
shit.
The whole ASAP mob.
Yeah, my God. So there's throughout this song and all of them, this rapid fire delivery that comes and goes. It's not constant, but those stretched out beats, I think, is what defines the sound for me. It was a lot to take in. I felt somewhat lost. Like, I guess I just wasn't finding a lot of lyrical threads to hold on to. I like a little narrative, a little storytelling, and I wasn't finding a lot of that, bits and pieces, but...
You got spoiled by that Kendrick Lamar record.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, this is not nearly the level of poetry that Kendrick exudes.
No. Yeah, I like the poetry in the hip hops. So, Andy, my question to you is, of your list of hundreds and probably thousands of albums listened to this year, why is this your favorite? Like, what is it about this that brought it to the top, cream of the crop?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a fair question because it's definitely not the best record I heard all year, but I think it just comes down to, like, if I could listen to one record and have, like, a good time for, like, 45 minutes, this would be the one I put on.
Good time. Yeah.
It's just fun. Like, if I need to relax for a little bit, this is going to be fun.
Breathe in. Hold it for a couple of seconds. And breathe out. Is that what you're talking about?
Whatever's involved there might be a good time. But yeah, I mean, that's for me. This is not highbrow by any means. It's more just about a good vibe, a good flow to it.
It tickles your innards.
Yeah. I'm feeling tickled after this. Tickled pink or... But yeah, so this is somebody that's been around for a long time. I think it's just kind of nice to highlight. I don't think we've ever talked about him or really the style on the show before. So I did something I enjoy quite a bit. Yeah, if you've never heard of Denzel Curry or not familiar with what's going on in the Southern rap space, I think this is a pretty easy spot to jump in. And there's a lot more perhaps hard-hitting records in the genre that you could explore, but it's a good place to start with Denzel Curry and the King of the Mischievous South.
Before we get to our next favorite album of 2024, we want to give a shout out to one of our partner podcasts, the Can I Pod with Madness podcast. Don, what are they talking about on their upcoming show?
Well, they're talking about Kerrang! Magazine. Do you guys ever read that one?
Yeah,
Britain, it's like, I think.
Metal mostly, or
metal and maybe some punk. But yeah, you know, it's a fun discussion, sort of like us. They can be all over the place. But
now, is this discussion also Iron Maiden centric, as is a lot of their show?
They do come up a lot.
Okay. Cool. Yep.
So it's Can I Pod with Madness? Can I Pod with Madness?
Sounded painful, but not too bad.
Well, this is going to be a big shock to our audience and to you guys, but my favorite album of the year is The Cure's Songs of a Lost World.
What? Yeah.
Wow, the way you even said the title sounded like so full of emotion. Songs of a Lost World.
So it was released on November 1st of this year. It's their 14th studio album by the British band formed in Crawley, West Sussex in 1976. It's their first album since 2008. A lot of anticipation. Yeah. So right now the Cure is, of course, Robert Smith on voice and guitar, Simon Gallup on bass, Jason Cooper on drums, Roger O'Donnell, the keyboardist, is back in the band. He took an album off. And Reeves Gabrels is their new guitarist. He's actually been with the band for 12 years, but hasn't been on an album yet. But he played with Bowie for many years, and he was in that Tin Machine group with him.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So let's hear the opening cut. This is Alone. Yeah, so that's the opening cut written by Robert Smith. In fact, this whole album, both the lyrics and the music, is just credited to Robert Smith, whereas on most of their albums, the rest of the band gets credit for the music. Huh. Robert said this track unlocked the record. He said it was inspired by a 1902 poem called Dregs by Ernest Dowson, which has the line, "This is the end of every song man sings." Yeah, he does that a lot, you know, throughout the Cure discography. There's lots of literary references in there. You know, it's a long song. You know, it's 2 or 3 minutes before you actually hear his voice.
Yeah, there's a lot of those on this one, but it's okay somehow. Like, that would have annoyed the shit out of me a few years back, but I feel like it's necessary. It kind of sets the scene. I don't know how it works, but it works. That's the kind of thing that I'm normally like. Next song.
It's kind of like his voice is just sort of like another instrument being added to the mix.
Well, with all the anticipation of so many years between albums, it also is like each song that has that setup, it's like, come on, Bobby, give it to me. When are you going to make me sad? Make me cry, dude. Make me cry.
All right. Well, my clickbait headline for Songs of a Lost World is The Cure plays to its strengths on Epic Return. I mean, it's not really new territory for The Cure. You know, I mean, they've always been really good at these gloomier songs, and the whole thing is mostly gloomy, dealing with themes of aging and death, loss.
The Kings of the Foggy London instead of Mischievous South.
Yeah, okay. That's good. I get it. There's just something about it, and I don't think it's just because I was, you know, desperate for a Cure album. There's something about it that just feels, I don't know, more natural or something. Like, it doesn't feel forced, you know. It's not like we had to make a Cure record and this is it. It just kind of felt like this is what he wanted to do, and it really works. Well, let's hear another cut. This is War Song.
So, War Song just sounded so Cure-y to me once it gets going. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we're a couple minutes before we get to the Bobby.
The Bobby. Can we just call him Robert Smith, please? Be respectful.
I feel close to him now, so I call him Bobby. That song, there's kind of like, it's a reflection on human conflict, and it seems like about war and nations and stuff, but it also seems maybe about just human relationships, destructive desires, that unattainable yearning for peace, which the older you get, the more painful it becomes. Where, you know, when you're young, you have all this, oh, world peace, everything's going to be great. And as you get older, it's like, nothing changes.
It's getting worse.
Every generation seems to go down the same path. But musically, the track builds that tension with the pulsating drums, the dissonance on the guitars. So yeah, Robert Smith sounds so good, so much just like he always has. I don't know if it's trickery or if it's true. Don, you've seen them live a lot. Does he still sound that good?
Yeah. Yeah, he really does. And cool. I don't really think he bothers with any of the like vocal effects. I mean, there's always like some echo on his voice.
Sure.
But no, I think this is it. He says it's just genetics because he said he's not taking care of himself at all.
Yeah. Well, kind of believe that looking at him.
Well, he still puts on the makeup. He wants to look pretty. Okay. So my clickbait headline to describe the album, Gothic Majesty Returns, The Cure and old Robert Smith find themselves again. Dark music for the dark joy of making it. Like Don was alluding to, not so much a return to form, but maybe a return to making music because they're moved to do so. I just am so happy to hear a new album from them that just feels like them. It's just a natural sounding reflection of who they are as a band. So I dug it quite a bit. It's in my top 10. So
excellent. All right. Well, let's hear the final cut from the record. This is End Song.
Yeah, that is the epic 10.5 minute closer there. It's a little bit of background on what I read on how the song was written. Supposedly, Smith was recalling a night he spent looking at the stars with his father after the moon landing in 1969. The quote I came across was, "The world that I was born into was getting incrementally better every year. It just seemed that the world was on upward trajectory, and the moon landing was just part of that. And then around the time I turned 16 in 75, it seemed the world sort of stalled and has been traveling down ever since." I saw that so nicely summed up. I mean, Robert Smith, maybe The Cure in general, but it does feel like this record is largely about like the world's kind of off course or kind of leaving Mr. Smith behind. And that's pretty compelling stuff as far as art goes. My clickbait headline for Songs of a Lost World is, if End Song is their swan song, it's a strong note to end on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this will be their last album or not, but if it is, I think it's a really good way to go out. It really does feel representative of who they are or who Robert Smith is. It's kind of like the general ethos of the band. It doesn't really feel like it's of the 80s or of the 2020s. It just kind of feels in between all of that, sort of a classic timelessness to the sound, I would say.
Perfectly said.
I think I really enjoyed their 2000 record, Blood Flowers, but that felt like they were trying to do something different, whereas this feels more like just classic Cure, I guess, if that makes sense. I really came to appreciate the drumming on this record, which is not something I usually notice a lot on Cure records, but they sound great when they're doing like the rock beat and they have like the dark kind of atmospheric production around it. And
yeah,
his vocal, you know, comes in. It's a really good mix they have going on this record.
There's so many literary references and stuff, which makes it seem smarter, which is always part of what The Cure is about. Like I can never say goodbye. Has that Something Wicked This Way Comes line in it, which is from Macbeth and from the Ray Bradbury book and a movie made of it. That's such a great line and it's used so effectively in that song. I appreciated that quite a bit. And Drone No Drone, the song after War Song. It's such a switch from sounds where it's much more aggressive sounding. I really like that juxtaposition. It was a good placement on the record, I think.
Yeah. The track kind of stuck out to me too. It's so different than anything else they've done, at least recently. I don't think it would have made sense anywhere else on the record, but where they put it,
yeah. It
works. Yep.
I agree.
I think that one, I think Reeves Gabrel's guitar, I feel his influence is on that track because he's like, he likes noise. Like, I think that's kind of, I mean, he's like a virtuoso, I think, but he's like really into just the sound of the guitar and just making, you know, just weird things happen with it. And I definitely hear it on that track. Speaking of a guitar, you know, that end song, it features like a lead line from Robert's bass six, which is basically just a regular guitar that's tuned down a whole octave.
We're going to start losing control.
Sorry. That's
he's gushing.
But my one complaint on this record is that six string bass is kind of lost in the mix. If you hear a live version of it, it's much more prominent and I like that more. But otherwise, you know, I really can't complain about this record at all. And as a big fan of The Cure, you know, I just don't think you could expect more than this. So I'm thrilled and it's my favorite album of the year. It's The Cure's Songs of a Lost World.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right, now it's time for a year-end edition of Deep Questions. All right, so we're talking about our favorite records of 2024, but what was your favorite thing outside of music this year, Andy?
Yeah, I was trying to think of like what good movie experiences that I have in the theater. I think the best one for me actually happened really early on in the year at seeing Dune Part 2 in the old IMAX theater nearby.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when we went to that Pet Shop Boys film together. Oh,
well, yeah, that just goes without saying that was an epic experience.
Yeah, Don tried that popcorn bucket trick.
I did the yawn, right? Where I stretch my arm out.
But I think my favorite thing that came across was, did you guys see the story about it? Maybe it was three or four weeks ago now where the Alex Jones has had a bunch of legal problems over the last few years.
Who's Alex Jones?
Alex Jones, he's the host of InfoWars, a talk show that's been
spreading
a lot of conspiracy theories. He was in court for a lot of terrible things he said, and he's had to sell InfoWars and The Onion. You guys remember The Onion, that satirical newspaper?
Oh, yeah. Yep. They're still around.
Still around. They got some money together and were able to purchase his company out from underneath him, which I think is one of the sweetest twists of fate that I've seen in a long time. So good on you for The Onion. And
don't worry, Andy. I'm sure old Alex will get back on his feet. I actually don't doubt that at all. Yeah, so 2024... really good year, all in all, if you add it all up for me anyway. Lots to be thankful for and lots of favorite things happened, but I'd say my absolute favorite, and it was tough getting there. Me and my wife, we made a move this summer, and the office I'm in now where I have my records and I work and all that stuff, I love how it came out and I love how it looks. It's such a nicer space than I had before and very thankful for that opportunity. It was a lot of work to move and everything, but I love this space and I love sharing it with you guys when we record these shows virtually, of course. Maybe someday we'll have a shared studio.
Yeah, Album Nerds headquarters.
Yeah, when I got my records set up the way I wanted them, they were spread out in the room before, and just, it feels good every day when I come in this room, so.
I can't believe you managed to move during the Summer of Dawn.
I know. I mean, Summer of Dawn was my main focus, but you know, I squeezed the move in.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of struggled to come up with some things, but I figured I'd mention a couple of streaming shows that I enjoyed this year. One was called Disclaimer, starring Kate Blanchett, Kevin Klein, and what's the Borat guy? What's his name?
Sasha something.
Sasha Baron Cohen. But yeah. really good show with a nice twist at the end. And then my favorite show on HBO or Max lately has been Somebody Somewhere, starring Bridget Everett. This was the final season. It didn't get renewed, but kind of a fun sort of offbeat comedy, sort of like Schitt's Creek, maybe a little more serious and real than that, but a good show. Well, what are your favorite things of 2024? Let us know. Hit us up on the socials, Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
So my favorite album of the year, and I wanted my favorite album of the year to be like metal or something, but it just didn't quite work out that way. I mean, I have favorites in that genre, but my favorite ended up being Fontaine's DC, and their album that came out in August of 2024, Romance. Fontaine's DC is an Irish post-punk band formed in Dublin in 2014. Grian Chatton on vocals, Carlos O'Connell on guitar, Connor Curley on guitar, Connor Deegan III on bass, and Tom Call on drums. Lots of Connors.
Yeah, it's Irish.
The band members met while attending music college in Dublin and bonded over their shared love of poetry. But Romance is their fourth studio album, marking their debut with XL Recordings after leaving Partisan Records. Critical acclaim, 2 Grammy nominations. It's shaping up to be something special. They shifted away from their traditional Irish themes. A lot of their songs were about Irishness and experiences in and around Ireland, but this one kind of features more of a futuristic dystopian landscape, and the lead single, Starburster, sets the tone for Sonic Journey into kind of a new territory for them. So why don't we check out a little bit of that, Starburster. That gasp, for some reason, is like the highlight of the song. It's really weird.
It's the biggest innovation in rock in decades right there.
Well, somehow it is, like, because that's the kind of thing, it's kind of, yeah, is. I don't know.
Yeah, it gives it an intensity, you know?
Yeah. It blends industrial, electronic, and even a little new metal influence into their post-punk roots. Clear nods, I think, to like Deftones, Alice in Chains. There's just, and even that kind of almost rapping style on parts of the song. Yeah. A mix of melancholy and defiance, love and loss, and yearning for connection in this dystopian world. I assume that maybe the experiences of 2020, 2021 had something to do with shaping the way people feel, especially younger folks like these guys, about the world around them and relationships and...
It seems like it, right? Like kind of that disconnect, perhaps, everyone's experiencing.
Are you guys more like Starbursters or like Mike and Ikers? Or,
Swedish Fishers over here.
See, Skittlers. I'm more of a baked goods dude. I'm not so much into candy. Yes. So if it was fruit cocktail caker or oatmeal raisin cookier, that would be more my conversation. My clickbait headline to describe the album, Romance. From gritty beginnings to alt-rock elegance, Fontaine's DC prove they can evolve without losing their edge. Kind of a rarity these days, a rock band that is breaking through.
Alt-rock elegance. Ooh.
Oh, you like that? But it's those punk vibes are mixed with a reverence for what came before, and I really love hearing shades of the greats and hearing keyboards and drum loopy sounding beats that somehow really works for these guys. Why don't we get into another track? Let's listen to a little bit of In the Modern World.
Yeah, the track there kind of works as sort of the centerpiece of the record, I would say.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was really impressed they could pull off a song like that. It's so stripped down and melodic and just kind of it's kind of a sweet, touching song. Though it is about kind of being disconnected, but they really do a great job. I was impressed by that one in particular.
Yeah, this album compared to the earlier ones, even Skinty Fia, which we discussed on the show, there's definitely, it's more emotionally charged. It feels like less deflective and more reflective.
Mm-hmm. That's a good analysis there. Yeah.
Where the fuck that came from.
No, I think that's pretty on point. It feels like kind of more of an emotional response. Yeah. And their songwriting is really pretty freaking good for some punk rock guys from Ireland here. All right. A clickbait headline for romance is Fontaine's DC strike up a romance with shiny hooks, and what do you know, it works. Yeah, this is a pretty big step forward for them, I would say, in terms of their overall sound and just kind of adding some polish to what was a pretty dark, rough sound earlier in their career. Lots of hooks, lots of well-crafted songwriting. I think the record's at its best when it's taking chances and exploring the edges of the box here, even if it is more of a shiny poppy sound. I think those songs like we've played so far do work really well. The middle of the record gets a little bit slowed down, maybe a little bit hampered by some of the weight of these topics, I guess, maybe. But I think it ends really strong too, with a couple of really killer tracks at the end. So yeah, I was pretty positive on this. I think I had it close to my top 10, if not in my top 10, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was number 8. On your list. Okay.
Seems about right. Yeah. These guys are ever evolving, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, me too. The opening romance, I think, sets that tone so nicely. It's a short song, but it kind of sets you up for the more slap in the face of Starburster, which I appreciate. Just it seems like there's a little more attention to detail on the way the album is built and where the tracks are. And I know, Andy, you found it a little laggy in the middle, but I thought moments like Bug with the kind of acoustic jagged guitar riffs, I thought there was some really good stuff happening in the middle for me. Mm-hmm. Explorations, kind of, but that's just my opinion. It's my favorite after all. Speaking of favorites, why don't we listen to favorites?
That's one of my favorites on the album.
Just sounds so much like something I would have been listening to in the late 80s and early 90s. So that's the closing cut on the record. Frontman Gree and Chatton described the song as having this never-ending sound to it, a continuous cycle from euphoria to sadness, two worlds spinning forever. And that's right up my alley, that, you know.
That's the catnip for Dan.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Also said it was inspired by There She Goes by The Laws, so speaking my language.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. So, it's more melancholy than what the last record was. The last one, I don't know, had maybe more of like a sinister darkness to it or something. And this one just feels maybe a more like romantic sadness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's more about, I think, relationships and emotions and feelings about the world around us than, like I said, you know, I think previous albums were more focused on their
discontentment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my clickbait headline for romance is Almost Great Band Becomes Great. So, nice. You know, I remember, I really enjoyed the last album and I spent a lot of time with it. And I'm like, wow, this is really good. And they're just so close to really being something special. And, I think this album crosses that threshold. I really think they've grown into something. This is a really mature album, I think. And I guess it's poppier, you know. I guess maybe that makes it a little more palatable. But they do it so well, and they really embrace the melody. You know, it still has some of those like intense moments that the last record had, but I think that overall softer approach just really makes this just a great listen.
You know, Chatton described this album as a collection of snow globes, emotional snapshots captured in time, each song like a small encapsulated moment or feeling. Kind of like that.
These guys were poets. Huh?
Yeah, yes. Well, it's starting to come out a little more, I think. One of the things I really love about this and why it's my favorite is this is a rock band that could be something, that could have young listeners, could be on the radio, could be something that actually brings people together and brings rock music maybe back to the forefront, a band, you know, an actual band, not just solo artists. There's something, they've got something special cooking here. So yeah. A bold evolution for Fontaines D.C., blending raw emotion, alt-rock influences, and new sonic textures that prove they're not just a band, but a force reshaping modern rock. So go check out my favorite album for 2024, Fontaines D.C., Romance.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right. We mentioned our very favorite albums of the year. What are some other great albums from 2024?
I got a couple here in my champagne glass for New Year's. Still got a little room in here.
Yeah, my champagne glass, yeah. I mean, if you can squeeze them in.
It's a stretch. All right. Talk about my favorite jazz album from 2024 by an artist named Shabaka.
I did that last time.
The record is called Perceive Its Beauty, Acknowledge Its Grace. This is the debut studio album for the woodwindist from Lungland, England. He's probably a member of Sons of Comet and The Comet Is Coming, which I think we may have featured albums from those bands on previous shows. Kind of a experimental jazz in like the world music space. This album has a bunch of features, including Floating Points, Andre 3000, etc., etc. Let's play a cut from the album. This is track 3. It's called Insecurities. It's Moses Sumney on the vocals there.
Laugh it up, fuzzball. Oh, sorry.
Still on Chewbacca. Okay. It's a really interesting record. It's very much in the jazz spirit, though it has kind of more of a world music vibe to it, I would say.
Yeah.
It's very loose and experimental sounding. Interesting production technique. He went in and recorded this with all these variety of different musicians. There's probably like 10 or 12 different musicians on the record. And he went back and edited the jam sessions and kind of created these songs from the edit and less from the actual plane. So it's
interesting.
Kind of exists on two planes, if you will.
Yeah. Listening to this album, it is just one of those examples of how much more pedestrian my taste is than yours. I mean, it was like I was floating in space and just unable to grab onto a tether to get my way back to the ship, you know?
It's pretty loose. It's pretty loose. But a lot of interesting things happen out there in space. All right, let's switch gears for a second here and talk about my favorite punk rock album from 2024. We're talking about Soft Play, the recently renamed group, and their album Heavy Jelly, the fourth studio album the band used to be called Slaves. You may have heard of them in their early 2020s. Somehow that didn't work out well for them, being called Slaves.
Mm. Yeah, that's not a good idea.
And they know Coldplay had a lot of success. So
right. You know. Yeah. They should have gone with Warm Play. That was more obvious, but Soft Play is fine.
All right, let's hear a little bit of, I think this was the lead single. It's called Punk's Dead.
Who's he talking to? Is it me?
I think so.
I didn't do it.
The record is just kind of ridiculous sounding, I would say. Just it's super fast and in your face, and it's kind of goofy, and it's very like anti-woke sort of critiques on society, which I appreciated. It's unlike any other punk rock record I've heard this year. That alone is pretty special. I'm kind of down with the message they got going. So
I found it unhinged, which I guess is probably good for this type of music. Just some of the songs just seemed a little silly, but maybe it was my frame of mind at the time.
That's the jelly.
There you go.
What else is on your list, huh?
Well, as I said before, I mean, it was just a good year for, you know, all the artists I like. And one we didn't get to talk about much this year, I'm sure I mentioned it in Diggin, is The Thuz Ensoulment, which is another one we've been waiting, you know, now 24 years for.
Jeez.
Of course, we did talk about two The records this year. You know, we just the Hank Williams covers, and then we did Mind Bomb.
So this makes it The, if we're now talking about a third.
Trips the...
The is basically singer-songwriter Matt Johnson and a cast of, you know, musicians. You know, it's pretty much on brand. You know, it's kind of post-punk mixed in with some blues and some folk, some psychedelic and some, you know, experimental stuff. Here's a song called "Some Days I Drink My Coffee by the Grave of William Blake."
Oh, man. So British.
They're called the rising sun. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. There's the folk. Yeah, it's just, it's nice, you know, to hear from Matt Johnson again. And a lot of these songs are, like, the subject matter is very modern. Like, he's talking about, like, modern dating and you know, AI and stuff like that. So it's kind of fun to hear his, you know, his take
sort
on those things.
From, like, a get off my lawn sort of perspective.
Yeah. He's always kind of been that guy. Anyway. Yeah.
I haven't always been the kindest to Mr. The. I have not listened to this album, so I will check it out before the end of the year to stay in the right frame of mind here.
I did have a chance to listen to it. I was shocked at how much it sounded like his 80s output in terms of the production and his voice and the whole thing. I mean, the topics are different, but I think in terms of maintaining the thunness, the thunness is strong.
All right. And then just changing directions, sort of in the, I guess we call it Americana these days. I mentioned this at some point this year. Gillian Welch and David Rawlings, longtime songwriting partners, they came out with an album called Woodland this year. It's actually their second album credited together. This was recorded at their rebuilt Woodland studio in Nashville following its destruction by a tornado in 2020. Again, you know, Americana, folk, roots music, introspective lyrics, themes of renewal, loss, and resilience. Here's the opening cut, Empty Trainload of Sky. Saw a freight train yesterday. You guys remember David Steele, who talked to us about country song, right? He's actually good friends with Gillian. I think they went to school together, like Berkeley or something like that.
Is this record all originals, Tom, Tina?
Yes.
That sound song's so familiar. I like that track a lot.
Excellent. How about you, dude?
So, yeah, what I tried to do here is maybe pick some albums that are from genres that I'm quite a big fan of. So from the sort of stoner metal, stoner rock side of things, I went with Lunar Effect, Sounds of Green and Blue. They're formed in 2016, emerged from the London rock scene, blending blues, psychedelia, and retro rock with a high-octane sound. So this is their second album. Why don't we listen to a little bit of Pulling Daisies? Love the bluesy just strain in the voice, fuzzy riffs, kind of classic rockish, but they just pull it off. I just think it sounds great.
I like it too.
Yeah, it's got the little swagger there at times, which it helps.
Some good press on this. I definitely think anyone that's a fan of those sounds should check this out. I also do have a copy of it on vinyl, and it's orange.
It's orange, but...
So my favorite country album of 2024, with some extra spices, is Motel Breakfast by Mac Leapheart. Mac is an independent artist working out of Nashville, a real grinder doing it all on his own, and just has a real zeal for making music and having fun and expressing himself, and it comes through in this album. It's a mix of country, folk, blues, rock, and even some, to my ears, a couple splashes of Zydeco. Why don't we listen to a little bit of the first single from the album, Rock and Roll Hay. So kick out the blues, what ails you, let the good times roll the bad away. Hey, hey, rock and roll, hey, hey, rock. His voice, his approach. I've never heard the term rock and roll hay before, and it works really well here. And the title track, Motel Breakfast, you know, being about life on the road and the hardships of it, but, you know, at least you've got that motel breakfast to look forward to, you know, your waffle and your watery scrambled eggs, but it's something, you know.
Yeah, complimentary muffin and waffle bar.
Maybe some grits.
Oh.
And it's just that attitude that drives this record. Some key tracks, in my opinion, Rosie, Shake a Leg, Pony Montana, Ain't No Pistol. Just great songwriting, and Mac Leapheart's personality comes through on all of it. The band sounds great. They sound like they're having fun. Did you guys get a chance to come back around on this one? If not, shame on you. If not, at least tell me what you think of motel breakfasts in general.
Sorry, man. I just kind of lost track of this one for some reason.
I did listen to it before, and I liked it. Well, I'm a big fan of motel breakfasts, particularly if there's like an omelet station.
Yeah, those are the fancy joints. I usually end up at the places where it's boxes of cereal and maybe some coagulated scrambled eggs. No coagulation here. This is a delicious motel breakfast. So go check this album out if you like fun country Americana, bluegrass, rock and roll.
Yeah.
I think he covers all the bases, and it's in a beautiful package. Check it out.
Okay, well, what were you digging in 2024? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show when I'm reminded of our founding father, an all-around cool guy, Benjamin Franklin.
Sure. He's cool. Didn't he invent, like, sunglasses? No, it was bifocals.
Wah, wah.
I'm sure he made the bifocals look as cool as the glasses. Mr. Franklin said, "Be at war with your vices, at peace with your neighbors, and let every new year find you a better man." With that in mind, let's bring out Wadbot and see what we'll be talking about on our first episode of 2025.
It's time to venture into the vibrant, mind-expanding, and transformative world of neo-psychedelia. Next time, you'll explore three groundbreaking albums that redefined sonic landscapes, embraced kaleidoscopic creativity, and captured the surreal essence of an evolving musical revolution.
So neo-psychedelia, that's a mouthful there. Basically, second, third generation psychedelic rock, is that what we're...
Precisely.
Should be interesting.
That sounds right.
Cool.
We're going to turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Right on. Peace, love, dope.
Well, what's your favorite psychedelic record? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you for joining us once again on the Album Nerds podcast. We hope you had an awesome 2024. We know we did. We'll catch you next time with that neo-psychedelia.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy New Year.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old... I don't know where to stop.
You never do. Yeah, that song's always been very confusing to me, but...
Should you forget? Should you not forget?
Exactly.
Happy New Year's, you bums!